stronger if you were by my side.
Now let's listen to Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, who's going to talk about today's topic.
As I said before, you know, there have been accounts that talk about the levels of fasting. That the lowest level of fasting is just simply staying away from food and drink. You know, the higher level of fasting is actually refraining from the sins of the limbs, the sins of the eyes, the sins of the tongue, the sins of the hands, the sins of the feet. And higher than that is refraining from being forgetful of your Lord. He says, and be careful that you don't pass your nights in sleep. It doesn't mean don't sleep, but don't sleep away your nights. The nights of Ramadan are very important. In fact, Salatul Lail, for example, the night prayer, is one of the activities that Imam Al-Askari, in a very famous hadith, describes as a very important characteristic of the Shia. That a Shia does the night prayer. The night prayer is an essential aspect of one's worship if one wants to embark upon the path of, they call it Sayru Suluk, the path of spiritual wayfaring, the path of becoming a true friend of Allah. The night prayer is a very important prayer. And therefore, in the month of Ramadan, it has been emphasized in many, many ahadith of the importance. He says, take care you don't spend your nights, your entire nights in sleep and your entire day in forgetfulness. Because in the day, we have to run around doing our daily work. And so in that process, we tend to be forgetful of our Allah. So take care that you don't do this. And that, therefore, your month would elapse with what is remaining, those responsibilities and those things that you think you should have done that you did not do.
At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma fastajib du'ayi واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين أوليائي بحق محمد.
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my Master and my Lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the fully, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, To My Brother. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, other effects of eating less. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab on IRIB English Radio. And obviously, today has a very obvious title, Other Effects of Eating Less. And this is during the holy month of Ramadan. And so these in a sense, are also effects. They're very obvious, but maybe we don't even think about them so much. But they actually have also, in a sense, deeper meanings and sort of very great benefits that go very deep indeed. So you can imagine and just think to yourself, I don't know how it is with your families or friends. Now, obviously, this applies both to suhoor, applies for iftar, and for sure also applies to the special meals, maybe at Eid. But let's just talk first just about the day-to-day meals, in a sense, but nothing in Ramadan is really day-to-day because it is special, the suhoor and the iftar meals. So obviously, if we're spending, let's say, a lot of time preparing quite lavish meals or big spreads, whether it's for suhoor, then especially for iftar. So I don't know, maybe you've observed, for example, people in your family, maybe you see your mother literally slaving away the whole afternoon during the last hours of fasting, preparing some huge meal for iftar. And you know, maybe some other people in the family are not engaged in that, and maybe they're spending extra time reading the Quran or making dua, and just think for yourself, well, I mean, that's not really fair, is it? That, you know, obviously, because, and this was the one point I was going to make, if we're spending huge amounts of time during the month of Ramadan preparing food, and that maybe is preparing the food, setting table, and then clearing away and washing everything, in a sense, we're also taking time away from worship. Welcome back. This is A to Z and IB English Radio. So I'm talking about some of the very obvious effects of eating less during the holy month of Ramadan, but that maybe aren't focused on so much. For example, the idea of just spending a lot of time preparing food, that obviously, in a sense, we might be cutting away time from our worship. We might be cutting away time from just, you know, having deeper, meaningful conversations with family members, with friends. We might be cutting away time from just that quiet time, that silence, really just remembering Allah in silence rather than being busy in the kitchen for hours to prepare all this food. Now, and then there's another point, of course, in a sense. So fasting has this other sort of good thing. I don't know if this applies. It goes with the other point I've just mentioned, because obviously if people are preparing huge meals every day, both for suhoor and iftar, maybe this doesn't apply. But imagine yourself, in theory, if we're eating less, that also means we should be spending less money on food during the holy month of Ramadan, in theory. So that means, in theory, we should be able to give more money for charity, to the poor, to whoever is in need, even to family members who maybe are facing hard times. So that's another point. So obviously I always meant, well, maybe this is maybe these are several reasons for avoiding these really big lavish iftar feasts. And you know, I've attended maybe iftar. I've attended different types of iftar. I've attended iftar that were very simple. You know, one meal, just one dish. And you know, obviously, people have some milk, people have some hot water, or sort of tea, whatever it is. Just the water to break their fast, and just a couple of dates. So, and I've seen the frugality, and I've seen the total opposite. And yeah, but maybe these two main points I mentioned give you just some ideas on some of the other benefits we have during the month of Ramadan. So I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio, and farewell for today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
The limelight.
The challenges posed by U.S. tariffs and strategic defense shifts represent a defining moment for the European Union. Experts say economic diversification, bolstered defense capabilities, and stronger partnerships with emerging powers are key to reducing dependence on the United States of America. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, during his first term in office, U.S. President Donald Trump unsuccessfully attempted to use a trade war to break the European Union, which he has described as a union of 27 free riders established to screw the United States. European leaders managed to weather the storm not through sound policy decisions, but by simply waiting out the Trump presidency, which was itself faltering under the weight of the COVID pandemic and other internal crises. The EU escaped relatively unscathed, and the Union remained largely united. However, Trump's second-term strategy appears to have found a more vulnerable target, the EU's unity in the face of a massive security crisis. By withdrawing support for Ukraine, Trump has engineered a situation that exposes deep cracks within the 27-nation bloc. As a cunning dealmaker with a keen eye for profit, he's poised to exploit those fissures. For Trump, the EU is just another supranational entity, like the World Trade Organization and the World Health Organization, that he believes keeping exploiting America. A strong EU presents a major obstacle to his vision of a great America, which must be able to dominate the rest of the world. Since taking office for the second term in January, his actions suggest a calculated effort to weaken EU institutions and the NATO military alliance founded in 1949 on the principle of so-called collective defense. Trump argues that the United States has been footing the bill for this security umbrella under which Europeans have rebuilt their economies from the ashes of the Second World War without having to worry about or spend disproportionately on defense matters. That sense of security through collective defense has been significantly undermined by Trump's decision to withdraw U.S. military and intelligence support for Ukraine on terms that would benefit Moscow. This has left the EU scrambling to fill the void. However, it is during tough times like these that cracks begin to surface in alliances. While some member states advocate for stronger collective action, others hesitate, wary of the economic and political cost. A fragmented EU is exactly what Trump desires. Trump's gambit could prove costly for the United States as well. The stakes are high, but so is the potential payoff. A divided EU not only advances his immediate goals, but also bolsters his narrative of America as a lone powerhouse unshackled by multilateral commitments. Trump has also reintroduced his trade war into the mix. This month, he announced 25% tariffs on EU steel, aluminum, cars, and agricultural products. In response, the EU retaliated with its own tariffs, targeting major American products such as Harley-Davidson motorcycles and jeans. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said in a statement, "We deeply regret this measure. Tariffs are taxes. They are bad for business and even worse for consumers. These tariffs are disrupting supply chains. They bring uncertainty to the economy. Jobs are at stake. Prices will go up in Europe and the United States. The European Union must act to protect consumers and business." The EU, an integrated single market of 450 million people, wants to send an unmistakable message to Trump that the bloc means business when it comes to defending its economic interests. However, for the EU, the question is no longer simply how to respond to these measures, but how to redefine its role on the world stage as it wakes up to the idea of the United States as an increasingly unreliable partner. The Trump administration's trade war is part of a broader strategy of economic nationalism. The tariffs, justified by the White House as necessary to protect national security, have sent shockwaves through European industries. Europe's initial response, a mix of retaliatory tariffs, was as much a reflection of its frustration as it was calculated economic strategy. However, as the economic impacts begin to ripple through the EU, policymakers are increasingly recognizing the need for a more strategic long-term approach. The revival of trade agreements, such as the 2019 EU-Mercosur Association Agreement, highlights Europe's determination to diversify its economic partnerships. This pact, which connects the EU with Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay provides access to an estimated 400 million consumers and offers the bloc a pathway to reduce its reliance on U.S. markets. Additionally, the European Union is increasingly reaching out to emerging markets in Asia. The European Commission President's push for a free trade agreement with India is part of this strategy. While tariffs dominate the headlines, the Trump administration's stance on defense carries equally profound implications for transatlantic relations. NATO has been unsettled by Trump's unpredictable approach to collective defense. His reluctance to reaffirm the U.S. ironclad commitment to Article 5, the alliance's mutual defense clause, has left European allies doubting the reliability of U.S. support. In remarks made in Warsaw last month, U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth warned Europeans that American troops may not remain in Europe indefinitely. He said troop levels depend on the threat level, America's strategic posture, and most importantly, the extent to which European countries are willing and able to step up. He stressed, "That's why our message is so stark to our European allies. Now is the time to invest because you can't assume that America's pressure will last forever." Approximately 100,000 U.S. personnel are currently stationed on the continent, serving as a deterrent against potential adversaries like Russia. A reduction or complete withdrawal of these forces would compel Europe to confront its own military limitations. The possibility of restricted access to U.S.-made weapons and surveillance systems adds another layer of complexity. NATO officials have raised alarms about the operational challenges posed by reduced intelligence sharing and surveillance capabilities. These concerns follow recent reports that the United States is pausing its cyber attacks against Russia, a move many Europeans interpret as a signal of waning American commitment to countering the Kremlin. In response to these developments, the concept of strategy autonomy has gained traction within the EU. Led by France and embraced by other member states, this vision calls for Europe to develop independent capabilities in defense, technology, and economic policy. While the idea has been around for a while, recent events, including Trump's row with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House, have lent it a sense of newfound urgency. However, European leaders know all too well that the EU's path to strategic autonomy is fraught with obstacles. Data from Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, CIPRI, reveals a stark reality. NATO countries in Europe have more than doubled their arms imports between 2020 and 2024, with the United States of America supplying a substantial 64% of these weapons. This marks a sharp increase compared to the previous five-year period, indicating that Europe has been moving further away from achieving any semblance of a strategic autonomy in defense.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
One of the hardest decisions you'll ever face in life is choosing whether to walk away or to try harder. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Well, this is Youth Station. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. I am Asma.
And this is Nahid, having the honor of being with you.
It's all the same, for sure. There are some times in life that we lie to ourselves. Now, yes. Honestly, Nahid, have you ever lied to yourself?
Yes.
But yes to that,
say,
for me too.
Let's change the word and say I have tricked myself.
Yeah.
For the betterment of myself.
Again. Yeah.
I'm bringing excuses
and you
already
always do that
before
consciously?
Mentioning it.
Do you always do that consciously?
No, not always, but in occasions. Like sometimes, as you know, I'm kind of an introverted person.
Yeah, I
so
totally
in some situations in which I have to act as a sociable one, I trick myself by that self-talk, by giving myself the vibe that, no, you can make it. You are sociable enough to go for it. And my mind believes these words, like, it falls into the trick and trap.
It's very good that it falls into the trick.
Yeah, of course. It helps me. Yeah. Like, in these situations, it really helps.
Very nice. You're actually mentioning the good part of tricking yourself with lies.
Yeah.
But then there are some occasions, well, surely that happens to me as well. Sometimes consciously and sometimes unconsciously, we all lie to ourselves.
Yes, for sure.
Now, for different reasons.
Yeah.
When it's consciously, as you just said, it's to cope up with what we don't like. The same thing happens for the unconscious times. Now, for the conscious part, lying to yourself is good, and sometimes it would improve you because you're just trying to help yourself. You're just trying to help yourself by tricking
yourself.
Yeah, by tricking yourself. But sometimes it happens unconsciously.
Yes.
Something happens to you, you don't want to face it, you just try to lie to yourself. Yeah, you try to lie to yourself.
Yeah, like the matter of death. Now that you're naming it, after the death of people that we love, we usually don't want to believe in it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's
this is
very
one of the
sad.
Examples that just came to my mind.
Yeah, and it's very sad. We don't want to believe it. What happens is that it turns into a trauma.
Yeah.
It turns into a wound that keeps cutting you every single time you remember it.
Yes.
But if you try to face it once and forever, you will recognize that something like death happens to everybody.
Yes.
It's very difficult, but
it's
I'm going...
It's nothing to be ignored.
Yeah. And I'm going to follow them.
Yeah.
One way or another. Eventually, that day would come and I would be a part of the dead.
Yes.
Let's bring it into a much more realistic world. The people that smoke, do they believe themselves as addicted people?
No. No.
They keep telling you that, oh, no, it's not addiction. It's just for fun.
Even addiction to anything.
To anything, yeah. I do believe it. Even addiction to toxic people.
Yeah.
Like you have a toxic friend. You don't want to believe that the choice you made of befriending this person was wrong, was the wrongest decision of your life. You keep lying to yourself.
Yeah.
You say that, oh, no, maybe I'm
this
getting
person?
It wrong.
No, not this person. Is she or he
you
is
see
not
how many justifications you would bring for only one wrong decision that you have made?
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, it's always the matter of making decision. By the way, you're listening to Youth Station. This is Asma and I have Nahid by my side. Well, we're talking about why sometimes we lie to ourselves. There are many psychological reasons for it. Is it good or bad? Can we put it in this way that is there any definite answer to this, whether it's good or bad?
Well, in our religion, in Islam, it has been mentioned that we have to be honest
with ourselves. Yeah.
We can have self-reflection, but we have nothing as like self-tricking or self-lying. So we need to be honest to ourselves. But what is happening is that sometimes we, I don't call it lying to ourselves. Sometimes we just, as I previously mentioned, we trick. We change our mindset with just giving ourselves some vibes, some self-talk, which will help.
Yeah, well, you know, psychologically speaking, if we come to talk about it scientifically, then it would be this way that it is called a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Applied on you by your brain. You know, there is this wish, this urge for self-preserving. Your body would hate whatever that is unknown, would hate whatever that is sad and painful. And whenever it just feels something smells fishy, it would trick you in this way as a defense mechanism.
Yeah, for sure.
It wants to stay in the same peaceful, reliable condition.
Keep you in the comfort zone that you've made for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best way to put it. Just it wants to keep you in the same comfort zone, and it doesn't want anything to harm that comfort. What happens is that whatever that you realize, it would ignore it. No, you're wrong. No, it's not that way. No, you have to stay silent. No, you have to keep it this
way. Yeah,
that
is not even the self-reflection, I think.
Exactly.
Because it's not helping, because it is not helping us to improve. It's just a kind of obstacle in our way.
Exactly. And then the bad thing about it is that you would get into this numbness, into this normalization that is not good. It would bring you into the point of desensitization. What is it when you lose all your senses about what's going around you? You lie to yourself to believe that what your friend is doing is not injustice. So you bring a lot of justification.
And you might be the victim.
And then you might be the victim. And then maybe you might be even a part of imposing, of victimizing other
worse.
People. It gets even worse. Just imagine in a country in which something wrong is happening. People are getting killed, and then you stay silent. Why? Because you just don't want to change your comfort zone, because you don't want to get out of that comfort zone.
Yeah, and in literature, we have too many books based on this mindset.
Exactly, yeah. So when you keep up with that lie that you believe as it being the whole truth, you end up as the victim of that.
Yeah, for sure.
You have to face the reality, even if it's bitter.
Even from the beginning, you are the victim in this society, in the society in which you observe something, but you just want to stay safe.
Exactly. So you see, in just as you mentioned Islam, and you said that in Islam we have to ask ourselves before we are being asked, it reminded me of something that is... Like, if you try to keep lying to yourself, imagine that you have money, you're an affluent person, you're so rich, and you have a lot of blessings. Then somebody comes and asks you for help. Then with your brain's talent, you come lying to yourself that I would help them with this and that organization. I would pay that this specific amount of money to this organization. But I'm not going to be paying to any other person who comes and asks me. You bring a list, a host of justification for yourselves just not to help that person who is needy. Maybe that person is my friend. Maybe that person is even, unfortunately, one of my siblings.
Yeah, excuses regardless of the person.
So what happens is that based on Islam, we have to face reality because... By facing the reality, I'm going to change myself. No matter how bitter, how painful, how excruciating the truth is, I have to realize it.
Even no matter what the consequences might be, we can just remember the battle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in Karbala.
Yeah, that's very true. So let's go for a break, and then we come back to conclude all of what we were just saying.
I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you until I took the first step, and that's when you opened the doors for me. Now, Allah, I realize what I was missing by being far from you.
Just before we go for the break, you were just saying that there are many consequences to it. And then you mentioned the story, the battlefield of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And that's very true. Sometimes we lie to ourselves because we do not accept that we're responsible, because we do not want to feel responsible. That's why we lie to ourselves, because I don't want to harm myself.
Yeah.
Because I know the reality is harmful. maybe it would be the death of me.
Yeah, and the threats.
Yeah, and the threats. So again, we come back to this point that it's a sort of a self-defense, but we have to remember that, you know, even sometimes people try to lie to themselves, because they want to reject the anxieties, all the anxieties and ruminations, all the chit-chats that we have with ourselves. We hate it. We hate to face ourselves telling us that we are wrong.
Sometimes we hate challenge. Like, we hate the challenge, though we know that without the challenges, we will not improve.
Yeah.
We just simply want to keep up with the routine,
mm-hmm.
and just be in the and just be in the way that we got used to.
Yeah.
We don't want to change ourselves.
Exactly.
We don't want to feel the hardship.
Yeah. And guess what? I myself am one of those people. Whenever I go to cafes, I am the person who says no, the previous order.
Mm-hmm.
I stick to that previous order, but I'm just trying to change myself.
Yeah, what if the new one is not that
much good? Exactly. I'm trying to tell myself that no, you don't have to stick to anything. You have to change it. Change yourself and change your perspective, because there, exactly, in all the challenges that you just mentioned, lies all the fun, maybe all the adventures, and maybe that would be the end of your life. But if it's for a good reason, if it's for a virtuous reason, then I guess it's worth it.
Yeah, if there is the logical reason, why not?
Exactly. So, you know, there are many lies that we keep telling ourselves. And one of those biggest lies that we tell ourselves is the hallucinations that I am always right. You know, I guess many problems in our interactions, in our daily interactions with other people and with ourselves even, is the fact that I do believe I am right. And whatever I believe in is the rightest thing ever.
Yeah, and it affects everything, every perspective, our relationships, the way we are dealing with other people, everything.
Everything. And it would create a selfish, narcissistic, a self-dependent personality out of me, which is not good and which is going to create a tyrant out of me.
Yeah.
I have to learn the fact that sometimes I have to admit the truth. Not sometimes, all the time. I have to keep this in mind, that as a human being, my knowledge is limited. As a human being, my perspective is limited. As a human being, whatever I see is not the whole truth. And whatever I hear is not the whole truth again. It's just a shred of it. It's just a ray of it. It's just one spectrum. And there's a host of others there as well. And I guess by admitting this very huge reality, many problems are going to get solved.
Yeah, for sure. Even accepting this fact that I might not be always right. And what's the problem in myself being into a challenge? What's the problem of changing that routine that I really love, that I really enjoy it? And what's the problem in improving in general? Like, what if I work hard for something, challenge myself, and then get the result, improve? So I guess that's all we wanted to mention on this, the importance of not lying to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And with the remembrance of the great instruction of the most completed religion ever, in which we are recommended to have self-reflection, but we are not allowed to lie to ourselves,
mm-hmm.
for the sake of anything in the world. With the remembrance of these great instructions, let's end today's episode of Youth Station. Until another time, we wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you.
Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything calls on you, the Lord Most High.
Allah, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Wassalatu Wassalam ala Ashrafil Anbiya'i wal Mursaleen, Sayyidina Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad. During this month, we have worshipped God. We have done many du'as and supplications. But all of this should have an effect on us. And the effect of this should be our connection to God should be stronger. We're talking about another term for this connection. We called it life itself. When a human is connected to God, he is alive. We read this in the verse of the Holy Quran last session. Today there is another verse of Quran that I would like to share with you. As we have, Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu istajibu lillahi walil rasul idha da'akum lama yuhyikum. O you who have believed, respond to Allah and His Messenger when He calls to you, which gives you life. Meaning that the entire call of the prophets, from Prophet Adam to Noah, to Prophet Moses, to Prophet Isa alayhi salam, all of the prophets, and finally our Prophet Muhammad, that all their call has always been for life itself, that religion is life, connection to God is life. And the more that we strengthen this connection, the more that we are alive. So we shouldn't believe that now that I'm a Muslim, I believe in Islam, now I pray, that now I'm alive, now I've been connected to God and it's over. No. First, we need to maintain this connection. We need to make sure that after the month of Ramadan is over, we maintain this connection. Also, at the same time, we need to strengthen our connection to God. Because the more you connect to God, the more we are alive. Right? So, and also, and another thing is that in all aspects of our life, in 24 hours, say in 7 days a week, we should be able to connect to God. And this is our goal, to have and to live life with ma'iyata ilahi, to always be with God. When we're always with God, we're continuously going to be alive, and we'll feel that. But then when you're disconnected to God, you'll feel miserable, you'll feel, as we said, you'll feel death, you'll feel not alive anymore. Some of the traditions that we have from Imam Ali alayhi salam, for example, he explains, La hayata illa bid-deen. There is no life except for religion. That the entire purpose of religion is to give you life, which is hayat. Wala mawta illa bijuhud al-yaqeen. And there's no death but except rejecting the apparent truth, the certain truth. There's other verses in the Holy Quran that talk about what it means to be connected to God. When we see the verse, for example, Ya ayyuhan nas antumul fuqara ila Allah. O people, O mankind, you are in great need of God. What does faqr here mean? Faqr means mutlaqul haja, that in all, absolutely, in all realms of life, we are in need to God. It's, for example, if you want to see how a human being, maybe make it clearer for us, how a human being is connected to God and how it gives him life. It's if you pull, for example, a plug out of the electricity socket, it will turn off the light. Therefore, if we are disattached with God, it's like pulling the plug on us. We are antum al-fuqara ila Allah. You are in great need of God. you are in great need, mutlaq al-hajat, you have great need in God. And we also see other verses of the Holy Quran, for example, wa huwa ma'akum aynama kuntum, that he is with you wherever you are. So if a person puts these verses together, and in the month of Ramadan, they decide they want to truly connect to God, they want to strengthen their connection to God, they realize that connection to God should be in all realms of life, one, and two, it has different layers and different levels, and that we, inshallah, will break through to higher levels, and we will experience stronger connections and live a stronger and better and more enjoyable life in this world and inshallah in the hereafter. And once a person has such a life, they will see this effect in themselves. They will see that they are connected to God. They begin to taste this connection. They begin to love the taste of dhikr and remembrance of God. Al-dhikru lidhatul muhibbin, it says in some of the tradition, that dhikr and remembrance of God is a enjoyment for those that are in love with God. Two, we see in other traditions also that actually our heart is in need of this remembrance, that our souls are in need of remembrance, that if a person doesn't have dhikr, if a person doesn't have remembrance of God, they are starving, they are spiritually starving. So in this month of Ramadan, we are surrounded with this blessing that we are enjoying talking to God, that He has given us the permission to talk to Him. Two, we understand that when we reach life, true hayat, that it will be a light for us. This connection to God will be a light for us, and it will show us the way, as the Quran says, and is one who was dead, and we gave him life and made for him light, by which to walk among the people like one who was in darkness, never to emerge therefrom. So if a person that is given the nur and light of the remembrance of God, is he the same as that person that the Quran calls that is dead, that is in darkness, that he is not able to walk amongst the people, he will be walking in blindness, he won't know what's right, he won't know what's wrong. So these are some of the effects of connecting to God, that we will have insight, we will know the way, we will know what is right and what is wrong with the connection of God. And that we said you will enjoy, it is a lidhat, there is a taste of the dhikr and remembrance of God. And the more we have it, the more we yearn for it because we have tasted it. So inshallah, in the month of Ramadan, the final days, we can, inshallah, focus on our connection to God throughout the day. We can focus on strengthening, especially during salat and dua, making our connection and our obligatory actions for God and our du'as and supplications to make it, inshallah, maximize it and to strengthen the connection.
قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله الدعاء سلاح المؤمن وعمود الدين ونور السماوات والأرض.
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله said, supplication is the weapon of the believer, the pillar of religion, and the light of the heavens and the earth.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. All praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and may peace and greetings be upon our Master and our Prophet, Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, and upon his untainted, pure, chosen progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I'm grateful to Almighty God that this gathering is being held again and for this pleasant, beautiful meeting and listening experience that this session provides. I also praise and thank Almighty God for the continuous increase in the number of Quran reciters. Today, our eyes and ears were enlightened and we truly enjoyed the recitations that were performed by individuals from different cities of various ages and in diverse styles. They were all devoted to the Quran and reciting. We ask Almighty God to make this Ramadan a true celebration and a blessing for the entire Iranian nation and for each and every one of you.
Subhanallah, alhamdulillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah.
What I believe is important is for us to be able to quench society's thirst, our own society first, with the inexhaustible foundation of the Quran. We need this. We need it very much. There are problems in our individual lives, our personal lives, our morals, our behavior, and our spiritual growth that can be solved with the Quran. This also applies to our life in society, which includes relationships within society. That is, our communications with one another, our cooperating with each other, our interactions, and our mutual affection for one another. Another part of our life involves our dealing with those outside our society. These are our concerns. In all these areas, both in personal matters and in social issues within the society as well as outside the society, we face challenges that can be solved using the Quran. The Quran can guide us in these areas and take us by the hand.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
We will never be silent!
Students at prestigious Georgetown University protested in defense of the latest academic detained and scheduled for deportation by the administration of Donald Trump, Badr Khan Suri, their professor at the school's Center for Muslim Christian Understanding.
One, we are demanding the release of Dr. Suri. Two, we are demanding that this university become a sanctuary campus, which means the university must not allow ICE, DHS, and MPD onto campus, and the university must not aid in the arrest and deportation of students. And three, we are demanding complete divestment from entities complicit in the ongoing genocide in Palestine.
Hundreds of protesters have been arrested recently across the United States at rallies for deported scholars. Many for the most notorious deportation case, that of Mahmoud Khalil at Columbia University in New York City. Both Suri and Khalil were legal U.S. residents, married to American citizens, and never charged with breaking any laws. Unlike Khalil, Suri was not involved in political activism, but was still charged with allegedly spreading pro-Hamas propaganda.
One academic's deportation read, quote, "Your presence or activities in the United States would have adverse consequences for the foreign policy of the United States." The question is, adverse for whom?
We can see through the military-industrial complex, the one that is making the ruling class in this country millions, billions of dollars, that if that was to be threatened, if Palestine was to be liberated, if the masses of this country actually are educated on what's happening and not being fed the U.S. propaganda around what we're seeing in the Middle East, it would be not detrimental to the U.S. foreign policy and the U.S. Domestic policy as well, but just more so detrimental to these people's pockets.
The United States is currently undergoing a lengthy anti-Palestinian witch hunt, which can only be compared to the anti-socialist Red Scares from 1917 to 1920, and then again from 1947 to 1957.
It hasn't just started with Donald Trump. You know, it's gotten much worse, but there's already, you know, efforts here on campus to repress pro-Palestinian speech. It's never been truly welcomed as free speech, even before Donald Trump.
A federal judge just blocked the deportation of Suri, but refused to release him back to his wife and three young children, and Suri remains in jail. Ramin Mazahari, Washington, D.C.
In the United States, he may be considered persona non grata. But here, South Africa's expelled ambassador Ibrahim Rasool is evidently loved and celebrated. A horde of supporters awaited him as he touched down after being condemned by the White House. In his first words to the public back on South African soil, the veteran politician said he stood by his comments and has no regrets.
In a very strange way, the fact that what I said caught the attention of the President and the Secretary of State and moved them enough to declare me persona non grata says that the message went to the highest office in the United States of America, that they were stung by our characterization and they were not happy with it. And so the diplomacy of Ubuntu has certainly worked because we bore witness to the values of our society.
The ancient African concept of Ubuntu says that life is premised on humanity to others, that no single entity is better than the other. And it is this principle that the ANC, even while seeking diplomatic engagement with the Trump administration, seeks to uphold.
This rally of support serves not only as a warm welcome for Ambassador Ibrahim Rasool, but also as a defiant protest against the United States for its position on South Africa. Washington's decision to expel Pretoria's envoy has garnered and sparked a strong amount of anti-American sentiment.